almost be. Somebody unzip me.
Tree has big boobs, Kitty says.
Are they real? Margot asks as she pulls down my zipper.
I step out of the dress and hand it over to Kitty to hang.
I think so.
They're real. I've seen her in a bikini, and hers spread when she's lying down, and that's how you know. The fake ones stay in place like scoops of ice cream.
Kitty picks up Margot's phone again.
Also, I asked her.
If they were fake, I doubt she'd tell you that, Margot says.
Kitty frowns at her. Tree doesn't lie to me.
I'm not saying she'd lie. I'm saying she might be private about plastic surgery, which is her right.
Kitty just shrugs coolly. I quickly put on the next dress to get off the subject of Ms. Rothschild's boobs.
What do you guys think of this one?
They both shake their heads and reach for the thumbs-down paddle at the same time. At least they're united in their dislike of my dress.
Where's my pick? Try mine on next.
Kitty's pick is a skin-tight, white, off-the-shoulder bandage dress I would never in a million years wear, and she knows it.
I just want to see it on you.
I try it on to appease her, and Kitty insists it's the best dress of all the dresses, because she wants to have the winning pick. In the end, none of the dresses are my style, but I'm not bothered by it. Prom is still more than a month away, and I want to scour vintage shops before I commit to anything from a regular store. I like the idea of a lived-in dress. A dress that has gone places, seen things. A dress that a girl like Stormy might have worn to a dance.
When Margot leaves for Scotland the next morning, she makes me promise to send pictures of potential dresses so she can weigh in. She doesn't say another word about Ms. Rothschild, but then she wouldn't, because that's not her style.
Chapter 13. Lucas says,
I think prom is a lot like New Year's Eve.
He and Chris and I are hanging out in the nurse's office because she's out to lunch and she doesn't care if we lie on her couch. Since we're so far into senior year, all the teachers are in a pretty generous mood.
New Year's is for basics, Chris sneers, picking at her nails.
Will you let me finish?
Lucas sighs and begins again.
As I was saying, prom buckles under the weight of all the expectations you put on it. One perfect high school night that every American teenager is supposed to have. You spend all this time and money and you feel obligated. No, owed an epic night. What can possibly live up to that amount of pressure?
I think the perfect high school night will end up being some random little nothing moment that you didn't plan or expect. It just happened. I think I've already had like 12 perfect high school nights with Peter, so I don't need prom to be epic. When I picture my prom night, I picture Peter in a tux, being polite to my dad, putting a corsage on Kitty, all of us taking a picture by the mantle. I make a mental note to ask Peter to get an extra little corsage for her.
So does that mean you aren't going? I ask Lucas.
He sighs again.
I don't know. There's no one here I would even want to go with.
If I wasn't going with Peter, I would ask you, I say.
Then I look from Lucas to Chris.
Hey, why don't you guys go together?
I'm not going to prom, Chris says.
I'll probably go clubbing in D.C. with my Applebee's people.
Chris, you can't not go to prom. You can go clubbing with your Applebee's friends anytime. We only get one senior prom.
My birthday's the day after prom, and I'm a little hurt that Chris seems to have forgotten. If she goes clubbing in D.C., she'll probably stay all weekend, and I won't even see her on my actual birthday.
Prom's going to be lame. No offense, I mean, I'm sure you'll have fun, Lara Jean. You're going with the prom king.
And what's that girl's name you're friends with now, Tammy?
Pammy, I say. But it won't be fun if you're not there.
She puts her arm around me.
Aww. We always said we'd go to prom together and watch the sunrise over the elementary school playground.
You can watch it with Kavinsky. That's not the same.
Calm down, Chris says. You're probably going to lose your V that night anyway, so I'll be the last thing you'll be thinking about.
I wasn't planning to have sex on prom night, I hiss. My eyes dart over at Lucas, who is looking at me bug-eyed.
Lara Jean, you and Kavinsky haven't had sex yet?
I look to make sure no one's in the hallway listening. No, but please don't tell anybody. Not that I'm ashamed of it or anything, I just don't want everyone knowing my business.
I get it, obviously, but wow,
he says, still sounding shocked. That's
wow.
Why is it so wow? I ask him, and I can feel my cheeks warming.
He's so hot.
I laugh. That's true. There's a reason why having sex on prom night is a thing, Chris says. I mean, yes, it's tradition, but also everybody's dressed up, you get to stay out all night. Most of these people will never look as good as they do on prom night, grooming-wise, and that's sad. All these lemmings getting their manis and their petties and their blowouts. So basic.
Don't you get blowouts?
Lucas says. Chris rolls her eyes.
Of course.
I say, then why are you judging other people for... Look, that's not my point here. My point is... She frowns. Wait, what were we talking about?
Blowouts, manis, lemmings, Lucas says.
Before that.
Sex? I suggest.
Right! My point is, losing your virginity on prom night is a cliche. But cliches are cliches for a reason. There's a practicality to it. You get to stay out all night, you look great, etc., etc. It just makes sense.
I'm not having sex for the first time because it's convenient and my hair looks good, Chris.
Fair enough. I don't know for sure, but I imagine my first time will probably be at college. In my own room, as an adult. It's hard to imagine it happening now, at home, when I'm Lara Jean the sister and the daughter. At college, I'll just be Lara Jean.
Chapter 14. It's decided that Daddy will propose to Ms. Rothschild on Saturday after hiking on one of their favorite trails. He's going to do it right by a waterfall. The plan is for Peter and Kitty and me to hide behind trees and record the whole thing, then pop out with a romantic picnic basket. Daddy was nervous about the video part in case Ms. Rothschild doesn't say yes, but Kitty begged.
It's from Margot,
she kept saying, when really she's just nosy and wants to see it go down. Of course I do too. Peter's along for the ride. Literally, he's giving us a ride. That morning, before he leaves to pick up Ms. Rothschild, Daddy says,
Guys, if it doesn't look like it's going to be a yes, can you stop videotaping?
I'm carefully wrapping roast beef sandwiches in wax paper. I look up to say, She's going to say yes.
Just promise me you'll quietly slip away, he says.
He gives Kitty a pointed look.
You got it, Dr. Covey.
Peter says, lifting his hand for a high five. As they slap hands, I say, Daddy, did you pack the ring?
Yep.
Then he frowns.
Wait, did I?
He pats his pocket and unzips the inside compartment of his windbreaker.
Damn, I forgot it.
Then he runs upstairs. Peter and I exchange a look.
I've never seen your dad so stressed out,
he says, popping a grape in his mouth.
He's usually a cool customer.
I slap Peter's hand away from the grapes. Kitty steals a grape and says, He's been like this all week. Daddy runs back downstairs with the engagement ring. Kitty and I helped him pick it out. It's a white gold princess cut with a diamond halo. I was certain about the princess cut, and Kitty was certain about the halo. Daddy heads off to pick up Ms. Rothschild. And I finish putting together the picnic basket. I'm glad to have an excuse to bring it out.
I bought it from a yard sale ages ago, and I haven't used it once. I pack a bottle of champagne, a perfect cluster of grapes, the sandwiches, a wedge of brie, crackers.
Pack a bottle of water, too, Peter says. They'll be dehydrated from the hike.
And probably from all the crying after she says yes, Kitty says.
Should we play some music for them when he gets down on one knee? Peter suggests.
We didn't discuss that part of the plan, and Daddy's nervous enough as it is, I say. He can't be thinking about how we're hiding in the bushes waiting to cue up music for them. It'll make him self-conscious.
Besides, we can add the music in post, Kitty says. We need to be able to hear the dialogue.
I give her a look. Catherine, this isn't a movie. This is real life. I leave them to go to the downstairs bathroom, and after I wash my hands, I'm turning off the faucet when I hear Kitty say, Peter, when Lara Jean's gone, will you still come visit me sometimes?
Course I will.
Even if you guys break up?
There's a pause. We're not breaking up.
But if you do, she presses.
We won't.
She ignores this. Because we never see Josh anymore, and he said he'd visit, too.
Peter scoffs. Are you kidding me? You think I'm the same as Sanderson? Me? I'm in a completely different league than him. I'm insulted you would even compare us.
Kitty lets out a relieved kind of laugh, the kind that sounds more like a sigh. Yeah, you're right.
Trust me, kid. You and I have our own thing.
I love him so much for that, I could cry. He'll look after Kitty for me. I know he will. Daddy told us they'd get to the waterfall around noon, so we should be there by 11:45 to get into position. We end up going a little earlier than that, just to be on the safe side, at Kitty's insistence. We pick a hiding spot far enough away that Ms. Rothschild won't spot us, but close enough to see. Kitty and I hide behind a tree, and Peter crouches behind one close by, phone in hand, ready to record. Kitty wanted to be the one to do it, but I make the executive decision that it should be Peter, because he isn't as emotionally invested in this moment and will have a steady hand. Just after 12, they come up the trail. Ms. Rothschild is laughing about something, and Daddy is laughing robotically with that same nervous look on his face. It's funny to watch them interact when she doesn't know we're watching. Kitty was right. It is a bit like a movie. He looks somehow younger next to her. Maybe it's because he's in love. They walk over to the waterfall, and Ms. Rothschild sighs with happiness. God, it's gorgeous up here, she says.
I can barely hear anything,
Kitty whispers to me.
The waterfall's too loud.
Shh, you're the one being loud. Let's take a picture, Daddy says, fishing around in his windbreaker pocket. I thought you were morally opposed to selfies, she laughs. Hold on, let me try and fix my hair for this momentous occasion. She pulls her hair out of its ponytail holder and tries to fluff it up. Then she pops what looks like a cough drop or a piece of candy in her mouth. Daddy's taking so long that for a second I'm afraid he's lost the ring or his nerve. But then he gets down on one knee. Daddy clears his throat. It's happening. I grab Kitty's hand and squeeze it. Her eyes are shining. My heart is bursting.
Trina, I never expected to fall in love again. I thought I got my shot and I was okay with that because I had my girls. I didn't realize anything was missing. Then came you.
Ms. Rothschild's hands are covering her mouth. She has tears in her eyes.
I want to spend the rest of my life with you, Trina.
Ms. Rothschild starts choking on her candy, and Daddy leaps up off his knee and starts pounding her on the back. She's coughing like crazy. From his tree, Peter whispers,
Should I do the Heimlich on her? I know how to do it.
Peter, my dad's a doctor, I whisper back. He's got it.
As her coughing subsides, she stands up straight and wipes her eyes.
Wait, were you asking me to marry you?
I was trying to, Daddy says. Are you all right?
Yes!
She clasps her hands to her cheeks. Yes, you're all right, or yes, you'll marry me, Daddy asks her, and he's only half kidding.
Yes, I'll marry you, she screams, and Daddy reaches for her and they kiss.
This feels private, I whisper to Kitty. It's all part of the show, she whispers back.
Daddy hands Ms. Rothschild the ring box. I can't quite make out what he says next, but whatever it was, it makes her double over laughing.
What's he saying? Kitty asks me, just as Peter says, What did he say?
I can't hear. Both of you be quiet. You're ruining the video.
Which is when Ms. Rothschild looks over in our direction.
Shoot.
We all pop back behind our respective trees, and then I hear Daddy's wry voice call out,
You can come out, guys. She said yes.
We run out from behind the trees. Kitty launches herself into Ms. Rothschild's arms. They fall over onto the grass, and Ms. Rothschild is laughing breathlessly, her laughter echoing through the woods. I hug Daddy, and meanwhile, Peter's still playing videographer, recording the moment for posterity like the good boyfriend he is.
Are you happy? I ask, looking up at my dad. His eyes brimming with tears, he nods and hugs me tighter. And just like that, our little family grows bigger.
Chapter 15. It's the first night we've all been together for dinner since the engagement, and Daddy's in the kitchen making a salad. Us girls are sitting in the living room, just hanging out. Kitty is doing her homework. Ms. Rothschild is sipping on a glass of white wine. It's all very mellow. Perfect timing for me to bring up wedding business. I've spent the last week working on a mood board for Daddy and Ms. Rothschild's wedding. Pride and Prejudice the movie, a whole wall of roses for the photo booth area, the virgin suicides, wine bottle floral centerpieces as a nod to Charlottesville's wineries. When I present it to Ms. Rothschild on my laptop, she looks vaguely alarmed. She sets down her wine glass and looks closer at the screen.
This is beautiful, Lara Jean. Really lovely. You put a lot of time into this.
So much time, in fact, that I skipped Peter's lacrosse game this week, plus a movie night at Pammy's. But this is important. Of course, I don't say any of this out loud. I just smile a beatific smile.
Does this vision feel in line with what you were thinking?
Well, to be honest, I think we were thinking we'd just go to the Justice of the Peace. Selling my house and figuring out how I'm going to fit all my junk in here is enough of a headache already.
Daddy comes out with the wooden salad bowl in his hands. Dryly, he says,
So, you're saying marrying me is a headache?
She rolls her eyes. You know what I'm saying, Dan. It's not like you have the time to plan a big wedding either. She takes a sip of wine and turns to me.
Your dad and I have both been married before, so neither of us feels like making a big fuss. I'll probably just wear a dress I already have.
Of course we should make a big fuss. Do you know how many years it took Daddy to find someone who'd eat his cooking and watch his documentaries?
I shake my head. Miss Rothschild, you're a miracle. For that, we have to celebrate.
I call out to my dad, who's disappeared back into the kitchen. Did you hear that, Daddy? Miss Rothschild wants to go to City Hall. Please, disabuse her of this notion.
Will you please stop calling me Miss Rothschild? Now that I'm going to be your wicked stepmother, you should at least call me Trina, or Tree, whatever feels right to you.
How about stepmother? I suggest all innocence. That feels pretty right.
She swats at me. Girl, I will cut you. Giggling, I dart away from her. Let's get back to the wedding. I don't know if this is a sensitive issue or not, but did you keep your old wedding photos? I want to see what your bridal style was.
Ms. Rothschild pulls a terrible face.
I think I threw out everything. I might have a picture tucked in an album somewhere. Thank God I got married before social media was a thing. Can you imagine getting divorced and having to take down all your wedding pictures?
Isn't it bad luck to talk about divorce when you're planning your wedding?
She laughs. Well, then, we're already doomed.
I must look alarmed because she says, I'm kidding. I'll hunt around for a wedding picture to show you if you want, but honestly, I'm not real proud of it. Smoky eye was the thing back then, and I took it a little too far. Plus, I did that early 2000s thing with the chocolate lip liner and the frosted lip.
I try to keep my face neutral.
Right, okay. What about your dress?
One shoulder with a mermaid-style skirt. It made my butt look amazing.
I see.
Quit judging me!
Daddy puts his hand on Ms. Rothschild's shoulder.
What if we did it here at the house?
Like in the backyard?
She considers this.
I think that could be nice. A little barbecue, just family and a few friends.
Daddy doesn't have any friends, Kitty says from across the living room, her math book in her lap.
Daddy frowns at her.
I do, too, have friends. I have Dr. Kang from the hospital, and there's Marjorie, and Aunt Dee. But, yes, it would be a small group on my side.
Plus Nana, Kitty says, and both Daddy and Ms. Rothschild look nervous at the mention of Nana. Daddy's mother isn't the friendliest person.
Don't forget Grandma, I throw in.
Grandma and Ms. Rothschild met at Thanksgiving, and while Daddy didn't explicitly introduce her as his girlfriend, Grandma is shrewd, and she doesn't miss a thing. She gave Ms. Rothschild the third degree, asking if she had any kids of her own, how long she'd been divorced, if she had any student loan debt. Ms. Rothschild held up pretty well, and when I walked Grandma out to the car to say goodbye, she said Ms. Rothschild was not bad. She said she dressed young for her age, but she also said that Ms. Rothschild had a lot of energy and a brightness to her.
I've already done the big wedding thing, Ms. Rothschild says. It'll be small on my side, too. A few friends from college, Shelley from work, my sister Jeannie, my SoulCycle friends.
Can we be your bridesmaids?
Kitty asks, and Ms. Rothschild laughs.
Kitty, you can't just ask that.
But I turn to Ms. Rothschild, waiting to hear what she will say.
Sure, she says. Lara Jean, would you be okay with that?
I would be honored, I say.
So you three girls and my friend Kristen, because she'll kill me if I don't ask her.
I clap my hands together.
Now that that's settled, let's get back to the dress. If it's going to be a backyard wedding, I feel like your dress should reflect that.
As long as it has sleeves so my bat wings don't flap around, she says.
Trina, you don't have bat wings, I say. She's very in shape from all her Pilates and SoulCycle.
Kitty's eyes light up. What are bat wings? That sounds gross.
Come here and I'll show you.
Kitty obeys and Ms. Rothschild lifts her arm and stretches it out. Then, at the last second, she grabs Kitty and tickles her. Kitty's dying laughing, and so is Ms. Rothschild. Breathlessly, she says,
Gross? That'll teach you to call your wicked stepmother to be gross.
Daddy looks as happy as I've ever seen him. Later that night in our bathroom, Kitty's brushing her teeth, and I'm scrubbing my face with a new exfoliant I ordered off a Korean beauty site. It's walnut shells and blueberry.
Mason jars and gingham, but elegant, I muse.
Mason jars are played out, Kitty says. Look on Pinterest. Literally everybody does mason jars.
Her words do have the ring of truth.
Well, I'm definitely wearing a flower crown on my head. I don't care if you say it's played out.
Flatly, she says, You can't wear a flower crown.
Why not?
She spits out toothpaste. You're too old. That's for flower girls.
No, you aren't envisioning it correctly. I wasn't thinking baby's breath. I was thinking little pink and peach roses with a lot of greenery. Pale green greenery, you know that kind?
She shakes her head resolute. We aren't fairies in a forest. It's too cutesy, and I know Gogo's going to agree with me.
I have a sinking feeling she will, too. I decide to put this argument aside for now. It won't be one today. For dresses, I was thinking we could wear vintage. Not off-white, but tea-stained white. Sort of nightgown style. Very ethereal. Not fairy, more like celestial being.
I'm wearing a tuxedo.
I nearly choke.
A what?
A tuxedo with matching Converse.
Over my dead body?
Kitty shrugs.
Kitty, this wedding isn't black tie. A tuxedo isn't going to look right at a backyard wedding. The three of us should match, like a set. The song girls.
I've already told Tree and Daddy, and they both love the idea of me in a tux, so get over it.
She's got that look on her face. The obstinate look she gets when she's really digging her heels in, like a bull.
At the very least, you should wear a seersucker suit, then. It'll be too hot for a tuxedo, and seersucker breathes.
I feel like I've made a concession here, so she should too. But no.
You don't get to decide everything, Lara Jean. It's not your wedding.
I know that.
Well, just keep it in mind.
I reach out to shake her, but she flounces off before I can.
Over her shoulder, she calls out, "Worry about your own life."
Chapter 16. It's an early release day, and I'm hurrying down the hallway to meet Peter at his locker when Mrs. Duval stops me.
Lara Jean, are you coming to the mixer this evening?
I don't remember hearing anything about a mixer. She tisks me.
I sent you a reminder email last week.
It's a little get-together for local students who were accepted to William and Mary. There'll be a few of you from our school, but lots of other schools, too. It's a nice opportunity for you to meet some people before you get there.
Oh, I did see that email, but I forgot all about it. I would love to go, but I can't because I have a family obligation.
Which is technically true. Peter and I are going to an estate sale in Richmond. He has to pick up end tables for his mom's antique store, and I'm looking for a cake table for Daddy and Trina's wedding.
Mrs. Duval gives me a lingering look and says, "Well, I'm sure there'll be another one. A lot of people would kill to be in your spot, Lara Jean, but I'm sure you already know that."
"I do," I assure her, and then I scuttle off to meet Peter. The estate sale turns out to be a bust, for me anyway.
Peter picks up the end tables, but I don't see anything appropriate for an ethereal backyard wedding. There's one chest of drawers that is a possibility if I painted it, maybe, or stenciled some rosebuds on it, but it costs $300, and I have a feeling Daddy and Trina would balk at the price. I take a picture of it just in case. Peter and I go to a place I read about on the internet called Croaker's Spot, where we get fried fish and buttery cornbread dripping in sweet sauce.
"Richmond's cool," he says, wiping sauce off his chin. "Too bad William and Mary isn't in Richmond. It's closer to UVA, too."
"Just by 30 minutes, I say. "Anyway, I was thinking about it, and it won't even be a full year until I'm at UVA. I start counting the months off my fingers. It's really like 9 months, and I'll be home for winter break, and then we have spring break."
"Exactly," he says.
When I get home, it's dark out, and Daddy, Trina, and Kitty are at the kitchen table finishing up dinner. Daddy starts to get up when I walk in.
"Sit down, I'll fix you a plate," he says.
With a wink, he says,
"Trina made her lemon chicken."
Trina's lemon chicken is just chicken breast with lemon seasoning cooked in Pam, but it's her specialty and it's pretty good. Sliding into a seat, I say, "No thanks, I just ate a ton of food."
"Did they serve dinner at the mixer?" Daddy asks, sitting back down. "How was it?"
"How did you know about the mixer?" I ask him, leaning down to pet Trina's dog, Simone, who followed me into the kitchen and is now sitting at my feet hoping for a crumb.
"They sent an invitation in the mail. I put it on the fridge."
"Oh, whoops. I didn't go. I went to Richmond with Peter to look for a cake table for the wedding." Daddy frowns.
"You went all the way to Richmond on a school night? For a cake table?"
Uh-oh. I quickly pull out my phone to show them.
It's a little expensive, but we could have the drawers kind of half open, bursting with roses. Even if we didn't get this exact one, if you like it. I'm sure I could find something similar to it. Daddy leans in to look.
Drawers of roses bursting out? That sounds very expensive and not exactly ecologically responsible.
Well, I suppose we could do daisies, but it doesn't really have the same effect. I cast a look at Kitty before continuing. I want to circle back on the bridesmaid dresses.
Wait a minute. I want to circle back on you skipping out on your college mixer to go to Richmond,
Daddy interjects. Don't worry, Daddy. I'm sure there'll be a million of them before fall, I tell him. Kitty, about the bridesmaid dresses. Without even looking up, Kitty says, You just wear the nightgown outfit on your own. I choose to ignore the fact that she called it a nightgown outfit and say, It won't look right if it's just me. The beauty of it is the set. All of us matching. Very ethereal, like angels. Then it becomes a look. A moment. If I wear it on my own, it won't work. It needs to be all three of us. I don't know how many more times I have to say the word ethereal to make people understand what the vibe of this wedding is. Kitty says, If you want to be a set, you're welcome to wear a tux, too. I'd be fine with that. I take a deep breath to keep from screaming at her. Well, let's just see what Margot says about all this. Margot won't care either way. Kitty gets up to put her plate in the sink, and when her back is turned, I raise my hands like I'm going to strangle her. Saw that, she says. I swear she has eyes in the back of her head. Trina, what do you think? I ask.
Honestly, I could care less what you guys wear, but you're going to have to run it by Margot and Kristen. They might have their own ideas.
Delicately, I say, Just FYI, it's I couldn't care less, not I could care less. Because if you could, then you are technically caring. Trina rolls her eyes, and Kitty slides back into her chair and says, Why are you like this, Lara Jean?
I shove her in the side. To Trina, I say, Kristen is a grown woman, so I'm sure she'll be fine with whatever us kids do. She's an adult.
Trina doesn't look so sure.
She won't want anything that shows her arms. She'll try to convince you to put a matching cardigan on top.
No.
Trina puts her hands up.
You have to take it up with Kristen. Like I said,
I could care less.
She crosses her eyes at me and I laugh, and so does Kitty.
Wait a minute. Can we talk more about this mixer you didn't go to?
Daddy asks, his brow furrowed.
That sounded like a really nice event.
I'll go to the next one. I promise him. Of course, I don't mean it. There's no point in me going to mixers and getting attached to people when I'm only going to be there 9 months. After I make myself a bowl of ice cream, I go upstairs and text Margot to see if she's awake. She is, so I immediately call her to shore up support on the dress situation. And Kitty's right. Margot doesn't care either way.
I'll do whatever you guys want to do. She says,
The hottest places in hell are reserved for people who maintain neutrality in times of crisis, I say, licking my spoon. She laughs.
I thought the hottest places in hell were reserved for women who don't help other women.
Well, I suppose hell has a lot of rooms. Honestly, don't you think Kitty will look silly in a tuxedo? It's a backyard wedding. The feel is supposed to be ethereal.
I don't think she'll look any sillier than you'll look in a flower crown all by yourself.
Just let her wear it, and you wear your flower crown, and I'll be neutral.
Honestly, I don't even see the point in me being a bridesmaid, when Ms. Rothschild and I barely know each other. I mean, I know she's doing it to be nice, but it's so not necessary. It's all a bit much.
Now I'm regretting stirring the waters and pushing the whole tuxedo versus flower crown issue. The last thing I want is for Margot to get any ideas about dropping out of the wedding. She's lukewarm on Trina at best. Hastily, I say, Well, we don't have to wear flower crowns. You and I could wear plain dresses, and Kitty could wear her tux, and that would look fine. How was that William and Mary mixer today? Did you meet any cool people?
How does everybody but me know about the mixer?
It was on the fridge.
I didn't go. There's a pause.
Laura Jean, have you sent in your William and Mary deposit yet?
I'm about to. It's not due until May 1st.
Are you thinking about changing your mind?
No, I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Things have been crazy around here with all the wedding planning and everything.
It sounds like the wedding is getting really big. I thought they just wanted to do a simple thing.
We're weighing our options. It'll still be simple. I just think the day should be really special. Something we'll always remember. After we get off the phone, I go downstairs to put my ice cream bowl in the sink. And on the way back, I stop in the living room, where Mommy and Daddy's wedding portrait hangs above the fireplace. Her dress is lace with cap sleeves and a flowy skirt. Her hair is up in a side bun with a few tendrils that slip out. She's wearing diamond earrings I never saw her wear in real life. She hardly ever wore jewelry, or much makeup either. Daddy's in a gray suit, but no gray in his hair yet. His cheeks are apple smooth, no stubble. She looks the way I remember her, but he looks so much younger. It hits me that we'll have to move the picture. It would just be too awkward for Trina to have to look at it every day. She doesn't seem bothered by it now, but after she's living here, after they're married, she's bound to feel differently. I could hang it in my room, though Margot might want it too. I guess I'll ask her when she's back. Trina's friend Kristen comes over after dinner later that week, armed with a bottle of rosé and a stack of bridal magazines. The way Trina talks about Kristen, I was picturing someone really intimidating and tall, but Kristen is my height. She has brown hair cut in a short bob, tan skin. I'm impressed by her collection of Martha Stewart weddings. It goes back years and years. Please just don't crease the corners, she says, which makes me frown, as if I would ever.
I think we should discuss the bridal shower first, she says. She's petting Jamie Foxx Pickle. His sandy head is in her lap. I've never seen him take to a stranger so quickly, which I take to be a good sign. I say, I thought a tea party could be fun. I'd make little sandwiches with the crust cut off and little bite-sized scones and clotted cream.
I was thinking a soul cycle party, Kristen says. I'd have matching neon tank tops made that said Team Trina. We could rent out the whole class.
I try not to look disappointed and just nod like,
Guys, both of these ideas sound so great, but I'm thinking no bridal shower, Trina interjects.
Kristen gasps, and I do too. With an apologetic smile, she explains.
We have too much stuff as it is. The whole point of a bridal shower is to shower the bride with everything she'll need for her house, and I can't think of one thing we'd need.
We don't have an ice cream maker, I say. I've been wanting to experiment with ice creams for a while now, but the one I want is more than $400.
And Daddy's always talking about a pasta machine.
We can buy those things for ourselves. We're grown-ups, after all.
Kristen opens her mouth to argue, but Trina says, Chris, I'm firm on this. No bridal shower. I'm in my 40s, for Pete's sake. I've been to this rodeo before.
Stiffly, Kristen says, I don't see what that has to do with anything. The point of a bridal shower is to make the bride feel special and loved. But fine, if it's that important to you, we won't do one.
Thank you, Trina says. She leans over and puts her arm around Kristen, who gives her a stern look.
But where I will not negotiate is a bachelorette. You've got to have a batch, period.
Smiling, Trina says, I will not fight you on that. Maybe we can do your soul cycle idea for my bachelorette.
No way. We gotta go big. So, Vegas, am I right? You love Vegas.
I'm gonna email the girls tonight so Sarah's husband can get us a suite at the Bellagio.
It's gonna be a no on Vegas, Trina says.
The bachelorette has to be local and PG so the girls can come.
What girls? Kristen demands.
Trina points to me.
My girls.
She smiles at me shyly, and I smile back, feeling warm inside.
What if we did karaoke?
I suggest, and Trina claps her hands in delight.
Kristen's mouth drops.
No offense, Lara Jean, but what the hell is going on here, Trina? You can't have your future stepchildren at your batch. It's just not right. We're not going to be able to celebrate the way you're supposed to celebrate a batch, like the old days, a.k.a. get naked wasted so you can live up your last moments as a single woman.
Trina looks at me and shakes her head.
For the record, we never got naked wasted. To Kristen, she says, Chris, I don't think of them as my future stepchildren. They're just the girls.
But don't worry, we'll have fun. Margo's in college, and Lara Jean's practically in college. They can be exposed to a little sangria and Chardonnay.
You do love your white wine, I say, and Trina swats at my shoulder.
Kristen exhales loudly. Well, what about the little one?
Kitty's very mature for her age, Trina says.
Kristen crosses her arms. I'm putting my foot down. You can't bring a child on a bachelorette. It isn't right.
Chris!
At this, I feel like I have to speak up.
I'm gonna side with Kristen on this one. We won't be able to bring Kitty to karaoke. She's too young. They won't let an 11-year-old in.
She'll be so disappointed, though.
She'll live, I say.
Kristen sips on her rosé and says, Disappointment is good for kids. It prepares them for the real world, where it's not all about them and their feelings.
Trina rolls her eyes. If you're putting your foot down on having Kitty at the bachelorette, I'm putting my foot down on penises. I mean it, Chris. No penis cake, no penis straws, no penis pasta, no penises, period.
I blush. There's such a thing as penis pasta?
Fine. Kristen pushes out her lower lip.
All right, then. Can we move on to the actual wedding, please?
I run and get my laptop and pull up my vision board, which is when Kitty decides to grace us with her presence. She's been in the living room watching TV.
Where are we in the planning? She wants to know.
Kristen eyes her before saying, Let's talk food.
What about food trucks? I suggest. Like a waffle truck?
Kristen purses her lips.
I was thinking barbecue. Trina loves barbecue.
I say. But a lot of people do barbecue, don't they? It's kind of
played out.
Kitty suggests.
I was going to say common, but yeah.
But Trina loves barbecue.
Can y'all please stop talking about me like I'm not here? Trina says.
I do love barbecue. And can we do mason jars?
I'm expecting Kitty to denigrate mason jars again, but she doesn't say anything of the sort. She says, What do we think about edible flowers in the drinks?
I'm pretty sure that was one of my ideas that she just stole.
Trina does a shimmy in her seat.
Yes, I love it.
I'm quick to add, we could do a nice punch bowl and float some flowers on top.
Kristen gives me an approving look.
Bolstered, I grandly say, and as for the cakes, we'll need a wedding cake and a groom's cake.
Do we really need two cakes?
Trina asks, chewing on her nail. There won't be that many people there.
This is the South. We have to have a groom's cake. For yours, I was thinking yellow cake with vanilla buttercream frosting.
Trina beams at me. That's her favorite kind of cake, just plain. Not exactly exciting to bake, but it's her favorite.
For Daddy's, I was thinking
a thin mint cake.
Chocolate cake with mint frosting, but with thin mints crumbled on top. I have such a vision for this cake.
This time, Kitty's the one to give me an approving nod.
I feel more in my element than I have in weeks.
Chapter 17. Kitty's mixing nail polish colors on a paper plate while I'm looking up celebrity updos for Trina's wedding hair. I'm lying on the couch with pillows propped up behind me, and she's on the floor with nail polish bottles all around her.
Suddenly, she asks me, Have you ever thought about, like, what if Daddy and Trina have a baby and it looks like Daddy?
Kitty thinks of all sorts of things that would never have occurred to me. I hadn't once thought of that, that they might have a baby, or that this pretend baby wouldn't look like us. The baby would be all Daddy and Trina. No one would have to wonder whose child he was, or calculate who belongs to who. They'd just assume.
But they're both so old, I say.
Trina's 43. You can get pregnant at 43. Maddie's mom just had a baby, and she's 43.
True.
What if it's a boy?
Daddy with a son. That's a startling thought. He's not exactly sporty, not in a traditional male sense. I mean, he likes to go biking, and he plays doubles tennis in the spring. But I'm sure there are things he'd want to do with a son that he doesn't do with us because no one's interested. Fishing, maybe. Football he doesn't care about. Trina cares more than he does.
When my mom was pregnant with Kitty, Margot wanted another sister, but I wanted a boy. The Song Girls and their baby brother. It would be nice to get that baby brother after all, especially since I won't be at home and have to hear it crying in the middle of the night. I'll just get to buy the baby little shearling booties and sweaters with red foxes or bunnies. If they name him Tate, we could call him Tater Tot, I muse. Two red blotches appear on Kitty's cheeks, and just like that, she looks as young as I always picture her in my head, a little kid. I don't want them to have another baby. If they have a baby, I'll be in the middle. I'll be nothing.
Hey, I object. I'm in the middle now.
Margot's oldest and smartest, and you're the prettiest.
I'm the prettiest? Kitty thinks I'm the prettiest?
I try not to look too happy because she's still talking. I'm only the youngest. If they have a baby, I won't even be that.
I put down my computer.
Kitty, you're a lot more than the youngest song girl. You're the wild song girl. The mean one. The spiky one.
Kitty's pursing her lips, trying not to smile at this. I add,
and no matter what, Trina loves you. She'll always love you, even if she did have a baby, which I don't think she will.
I stop.
Wait, did you mean it when you said I was the prettiest?
No, I take it back. I'll probably be the prettiest by the time I get to high school. You can be the nicest.
I leap off the couch and grab her by the shoulders like I'm going to shake her, and she giggles.
I don't want to be the nicest, I say. You are, though.
She says it not like an insult, but not exactly like a compliment.
What do you wish you had of mine?
Your nerve.
What else?
Your nose. You have a little nubbin of a nose.
I tap it.
What about me?
Kitty shrugs.
I don't know.
Then she cracks up, and I shake her by the shoulders.
I'm still thinking about it later that evening. I hadn't thought of Daddy and Trina having a baby. But Trina doesn't have any children, just her fur baby, Golden Retriever Simone. She might want a baby of her own. And Daddy's never said so, but is there a chance he'd want to try one more time for a son? The baby would be 18 years younger than me. What a strange thought. And even stranger still, I'm old enough to have a baby of my own. What would Peter and I do if I got pregnant? I can't even picture what would happen. All I can see is the look on Daddy's face when I tell him the news, and that's about as far as I get. The next morning on the way to school in Peter's car, I steal a look at his profile.
I like how you're so smooth, I say. Like a baby.
I could grow a beard if I wanted to, he says, touching his chin. A thick one.
Fondly, I say, no, you couldn't. But maybe one day when you're a man. He frowns.
I am a man. I'm 18.
I scoff. You don't even pack your own lunches. Do you even know how to do laundry?
I'm a man in all the ways that count,
he boasts, and I roll my eyes.
What would you do if you were drafted to go to war? I ask.
Aren't college kids given a pass on that? Does the draft even still exist?
I don't know the answers to either of these questions, so I barrel forward. What would you do if I got pregnant right now?
Lara Jean, we're not even having sex. That would be the Immaculate Conception.
If we were, I press.
He groans. You and your questions. I don't know. How could I know what I would do?
What do you think you would do?
Peter doesn't hesitate.
Whatever you wanted to do. Wouldn't you want to decide together?
I'm testing him for what I don't know.
I'm not the one who has to carry it. It's your body, not mine. His answer pleases me, but still I keep going.
What if I said, let's have the baby and get married?
Again, Peter doesn't hesitate.
I'd say, sure, yeah.
Now I'm the one frowning. Sure? Just like that. The biggest decision of your life and you just say, sure.
Yeah, because I am sure.
I lean over to him and put my palms on his smooth cheeks. That's how I know you're still a boy. Because you're so sure. He frowns back at me.
Why are you saying it like it's a bad thing?
I let go. You're always so sure of everything about yourself. You've never been not sure.
Well, I'm sure of this one thing, he says, staring straight ahead. I'm sure I'd never be the kind of dad my dad is, no matter how old I am.
I go quiet, feeling guilty for teasing him and bringing up bad feelings. I want to ask if his dad is still reaching out to make amends, but the closed-up look on Peter's face stops me. I just wish he and his dad could fix things between them before he goes to college. Because right now, Peter is still a boy. And deep down, I think all boys want to know their dads, no matter what kind of men they are. After school, we go through the drive-thru, and Peter's already tearing into his sandwich before we're out of the parking lot. Between bites of fried chicken sandwich, he says,
Did you mean it when you said before that you couldn't picture marrying me?
I didn't say that.
I mean, you kind of said that. You said I'm still a boy and you couldn't marry a boy.
Now I've gone and hurt his feelings. I didn't mean it like that. I meant I couldn't picture marrying anybody right now. We're both still babies. How could we have a baby? Without thinking, I say, Anyway, my dad gave me a whole birth control kit for college, so we don't even have to worry about it. Peter nearly chokes on his sandwich.
A birth control kit?
Sure. Condoms and dental dams. Peter, do you know what a dental dam is?
A what? Is that what dentists use to keep your mouth open when they clean it?
I giggle. No, it's for oral sex. And here I thought you were this big expert and you were going to be the one to teach me everything at college. My heart speeds up as I wait for him to make a joke about the two of us finally having sex at college, but he doesn't. He frowns and says,
I don't like the thought of your dad thinking we're doing it when we're not.
He just wants us to be careful is all. He's a professional, remember? I pat him on the knee. Either way, I'm not getting pregnant, so it's fine. He crumples up his napkin and tosses it in the paper bag, his eyes still on the road.
Your parents met in college, didn't they?
I'm surprised he remembers. I don't remember telling him that. Yeah.
So, how old were they? 18, 19?
Peter's headed somewhere with this line of questioning. 20, I think. His face dims, but just slightly.
Okay, 20. I'm 18, and you'll be 18 next month. 20 is just 2 years older. So what difference does 2 years make in the grand scheme of things?
He beams a smile at me.
Your parents met at 20. We met at
12, I supply. Peter frowns, annoyed that I've messed up his argument.
Okay, so we met when we're kids, but we didn't get together until we were 17.
I was 16.
We didn't get together for real until we were both basically 17. Which is basically the same thing as 18, which is basically the same thing as 20.
He has the self-satisfied look of a lawyer who has just delivered a winning closing statement.
That's a very long and twisty line of logic, I say. Have you ever thought about being a lawyer?
No, but now I'm thinking maybe.
UVA has a great law school, I say.
And I get a sudden pang because college is one thing, but law school? That's so far away.
And who knows what will happen between now and then.
By then we'll be such different people.
Thinking of Peter in his 20s, I feel a sense of yearning for the man I may never get to meet. Right now, today, he's still a boy, and I know him better than anybody. But what if it isn't always this way? Already our paths are diverging. A little more every day, the closer we get to August.
Chapter 18. Trina put her house on the market a couple of weeks after she and Daddy got engaged. Kristen's a real estate agent, and she told her that now was the time to sell, because everybody likes to buy in the springtime. It turns out she was right. A couple made an offer on it the very same week, sooner than any of us could have imagined. Daddy and Trina thought the house would sit on the market for at least a month, but now movers are unloading boxes at our house, and everything's careening forward at lightning speed. There was never any big discussion about who was moving in with who. It was just understood that Trina was coming here. For one, our house is bigger, but also it's easier to move one person than four, you would think. For one person, Trina has a lot of stuff. Boxes and boxes of clothes and shoes, her exercise equipment, random pieces of furniture, a huge velvet upholstered headboard that I know my dad is horrified by.
If it was me, I wouldn't want to move into another woman's house, Chris says.
She's standing at my window watching Trina direct the movers. She stopped by on her way to work to borrow a pair of my shoes.
What other woman? I ask her.
Your mom. I would always feel like it was her house. Like she picked the furniture, the wallpaper.
Actually, Margo and I picked a lot of it, I say. I picked the dining room wallpaper, she picked the upstairs bathroom color.
I remember that Margo and Mommy and I sat down on the living room floor with all the wallpaper books and carpet samples and paint chips spread around us. We spent the whole afternoon going over every book with a fine-tooth comb, with Margo and me battling over which blue was the right blue for the upstairs bathroom we'd share. I thought robin's egg blue, and Margo thought sky blue. Mommy finally had us do rock, paper, scissors for it, and Margo won. I sulked over it until I beat her out with my wallpaper choice.
I'm just saying, I feel like if I was Trina, I would want a fresh start, Chris says.
Well, that's kind of impossible when her husband-to-be already has three kids.
You know what I mean? As fresh as possible.
They're getting a new bed, at least. It's coming tomorrow.
Chris perks up at this. Flopping on my bed, she says,
"Ew, is it weird to think about your dad having sex?"
I slap her on the leg. "I don't think about that, so please don't bring it up."
Picking at the strings on her cutoffs, she says,
"Trina does have a great body."
"I'm not kidding, Chris.
I'm just saying I would kill to have her body at her age.
She's not that old."
"Still..."
Chris preens at me prettily.
"If I open the window, can I smoke in here?"
"I think you know the answer to that question, Christina."
She pouts, but it's just for show, because she knew I wasn't going to say yes.
Ugh! America's so annoying about smoking. So basic.
Now that Chris is going to Costa Rica, she relishes looking down on everything American. I still can't believe she's leaving.
"Are you really not going to prom?" I ask.
"I'm really not."
"You're going to regret not going," I warn her. "When you're working on the farm in Costa Rica, you'll suddenly remember how you didn't go to prom, and you'll feel abject regret, and you'll have no one to blame but yourself."
With a laugh, she says,
"I highly doubt it."
After Chris leaves for work, I'm on my computer in the kitchen looking for bridesmaid dresses and or prom dresses, and Daddy and Trina walk in from being outside with the movers. I try to look busy like I'm studying in case they ask for help. Shrewd little Kitty has made herself scarce these past couple of days, and I'm regretting not